You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Yo, what's up, everybody? Welcome. This is the Houseless Podcast. My name is Peter Agostin. It has been a while since I got behind the mic for the show. I want to first thank everybody for continuing to listen and supporting and spreading the word on the DJ mixes and the musical mixes that I've been putting out since the top of the year. I wanted to get back in the swing of some audio stuff with me on the mic again, and I thought that this might be a good one, at least to set up as an intro, because this show isn't me speaking. In fact, it's a group of guys remembering the great hip-hop performer, rapper, Steezo. Steezo, who just recently passed away April 29th of this year, 2020, native son of New Haven, Connecticut, who had been living in Charlotte, North Carolina. Steezo was and is one of the greatest hip-hop exports from the state of Connecticut. And I happen to know a couple of his close friends and family members from years of doing music with them. One being Chris Lowe, who I released his album on my old label. His album was called The Black Life. I think we put that out in 2003. And my friend Dulio, who was Steezo's cousin. Dulio and I have done some projects together. He's been on the podcast twice. He did a mix on episode 74 that's amazing, called The Beat Segment Part 3. You should check out. And even further back on, our first conversation was episode 74, which is us doing an actual interview. And then on the mix series, he was episode 124. Apologies about that. Go back and check those out. They're both amazing. This, what I'm about to share with you, was a group of Steve's friends, collaborators, who gathered basically on a Zoom call that was broadcast on WYBC, a radio station that broadcast out of the campus of Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut. And I thought, with Dulio's blessing, he provided me the file for that particular show where they all gathered. It's about, you know, six or seven guys and just reminiscing, telling stories in memory of their friend. A tragic loss. And he came from a pretty tight-knit small community of guys, a lot of guys that were just like grew up together, you know, family members and friends. And Dooley and I had been talking a lot in the last couple of weeks, just, you know, during this period of quarantine, just catching up with old friends. And we were talking about new music he was working on and ways to new ideas on how he wanted to release music and stuff like that. So I was just a sounding board like any friend. And then when this happened, I they did this, I knew that they were fans of Steezo's work that would have wanted to hear this, but might not have been able to catch it when it was broadcast from the station, streamed from WYBC. That's 94.3. So they sent me the files. I wanted to record a little intro. I also play an unreleased song from Steezo that eventually now you can actually get it on Dulio's Bandcamp, which I recommend you guys checking out. I play that at the very end of the show. I think you guys are going to dig it. Especially any fans of this of the Sleeping Bag era, Steezo, if you wanted to know some stories, some anecdotes, you know, the guys go in, it's pretty heartfelt, and I think you're really going to like it if you're a fan. Just so you know a little bit of context to the people that are on this particular call, it's the host, Juan Castillo, of the station. It's his show. Chris Lowe, of course, is on it. Dulio was on it. Jim Slice is on it, who many of you might know that name. He popped up on a lot of Steezo's songs and records, as well as Dooley and Chris. Superman J, actually from the Skinny Boys, classic old school hip hop group, released 3 albums. They were from Bridgeport, Connecticut, excuse me, but of the same era, some releasing some pretty dope stuff in the late 80s. In fact, a lot of you, especially the younger listeners or whatever, might know the Skinny Boys and not even really realize it, because their super popular song, Jockbox, well, actually became even more popular because it was the theme and interpolated throughout the show, Workaholics. So just to give you a little bit more context. Also, E and Lil E are on this call. So just so you can identify some of the names of the people talking, since it originated as a video call. So I'm sharing you the audio file, and I hope you guys dig it, man. Thank you so much. I'm not going to go long on this, and hopefully you'll be hearing my voice again on later episodes of the podcast. I will eventually get back to that, but in the meantime, I've been enjoying sharing the DJ mixes. So let's get into this. Rest in peace to Steezo. Great guy, and out of a great camp of really cool people, cool human beings. So my condolences to his friends and family. And to all the fans out there, I hope you guys enjoy this. Peace. Check it out.
All right. So here we go. 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. One Castillo with you on a Friday night. And I've got some brothers in here, man, who have a legacy, along with my man, Steezo, who we lost this week. And these brothers work with him extensively. They were part of the crew. And you need to hear from them, man, because they made history back in the day. There's a legacy behind all of this, man. So we're gonna get started with you, Dulio. Let's talk about Steve, man.
All right. I met Steve when I was about 6 years old. At a family cookout. And you know, the crazy thing was when I met him, he was like, "What's up?" I was like, What's up? You know, my mother's mother, crazy cool. It was like, "It's your cousin Steezo." Now Steezo Steve. And Steve, you know, we kicked it off right then and there. And what happened is, all of a sudden, he was like, he saw the mattresses, you know, because back in the day, we used to flip on mattress when we didn't have a gym or anything to go to.
So no jump parks back then.
Right. It was an empty lot right next to the house.
There you go.
With mattresses, because we, you know, everybody used to flip. Steve said, "Y'all be flipping?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "All right." He said, "Watch this." So we all was like, "What are you talking about?" Because all the kids was over too, you know, neighborhood cookout. Steve climbs up on top of the garage and does a backflip off the garage. You know, if you want to make an impression, your first impression, you know, you do something like that. So, I mean, after that, you know, grew up, and then the 80s started hanging out a little more tough, going out the Brookside. You should do some wild stuff out there, jump in the lake. This dude made his own fishing rod out of a stick in a milk carton, cut the milk carton open, put a square in the middle of it, and wait for a fish to come by and catch it. Like, I mean, he was so much of an innovator. I mean, and I'm gonna leave it from that point to, you know, being into fashion, taking things to the next level.
Jack of all trades.
You know, at one point when I wasn't really dealing with Steve, you know, during, you know, the high top fade, when the high top fade just started coming out, already he had the tallest fade in town. You know, you talking about how Ken and Play joint was. It was about exactly that same high. You know what I'm saying? Back before we even knew who Ken and Play was. Like, he had to be on top of everybody in what he did. And over the years, he proved it. So then we get into, you know, I knew he did graffiti a little bit. So, you know, I was doing the hip-hop graffiti thing, too. We kind of played around with spray cans a little bit. Not too much, you know, because he was deep into breakdancing. And just like in breakdancing, he mastered that. You know, he mastered breakdancing, was taking people out. He was known as the best breakdancer in town. A whole bunch of things. And then the music scene got in, the fashion show at Montego Bay. You know, he came in first place.
And the dancing, you know, at Montego Bay. That's where I first seen him.
Dancing. He was getting his dance on. He was nice with the dancing. I mean, everything he did in every step of any type of genre, he mastered it quick. If you ever see him walk up to a piano, he don't even know how to play a piano. I seen him one time walk up to a piano and be like, ding, 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 ding. All of a sudden, he got it. Played the piano right in front of me one time. You know? He was the first I heard use a SK-1 Casio keyboard and turn it into a sampler. I didn't know where to sit. I ain't know nothing about sampling at this time.
Crazy.
You know, he comes to Montego Bay and does a talent show. And all of a sudden, the beat come on, and he's got this thing going, easy to dance to this, easy, 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 easy. I'm like, yo, hold on. That's too advanced. What is that? You know what I'm saying? Like, he was advanced on everything that he did. And then, you know, we could switch it over then, you know. Chris.
Yeah, Chris, you know, man.
Tell then, you know.
Give us your take on your man.
What's
you
up? What's up, Mr. Juan? Greetings to you. Hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. Go ahead, my brother.
First of all, let me just say what's up to the Elm City.
Indeed.
Me and my friends. I don't got no specific shout outs right now, but if you know me, that's who you are. I'm still trying to process all of this because a lot of people don't even realize how many people knew Steve. I mean, and to be from New Haven, it's right up there with your Sly Williams, you know what I'm saying, your Theron Mays, you know, that's legendary right there. And I'm just like really trying to really grasp how many people knew Steve. I just got off the phone with Terrell. Terrell was one of our dancers. He in L.A., and Terrell said, yo, they give it a mad love in L.A., man. So, to L.A., y'all always was funky. Always. But, man, this is it's bigger than what you think. I know it ain't, like, on no triple platinum. But a lot of people in the industry right now, back then, they know who Steve was. You know, a lot of times, we so egotistical, we don't want to let nobody know nothing. But, yeah. A lot of people knew Steve, man.
Yeah, DJ Khaled, as a matter of fact, you know, they got a picture of him, and that's my man, by the way, going in the crates, pulling out the joints, you know? So,
there you go. Man, you had that record, man. If you hip-hop, I don't care where you from. I'm saying, where you from? If you hip-hop, you had that record, man. You a DJ? Yeah, you... And shout out to all the people who sending condolences, man. You know, that, and this is what make me, you know, real sad because Steve was making a comeback, man. He was making a comeback, and he was right in the middle of it, and you know, just like that. I'm sorry for moving the phone so much. I'm driving, man. I know I got to pull over.
So, Superman. Tell us about, you know, your thoughts, man, and the legacy, man, and your involvement, man, with this great man.
I have an abundance of stories about Steve and the whole crew. I mean,
we got time.
I remember, just to start off, first of all, thank you for inviting me to this, man, because Steve was a very infectious person. I mean, he's very outgoing, very talented. And he would come up to the studio, him and the fellas would come up to my studio in Bridgeport, and they're recording. And like Dulio said, anything Steve put his hands on, sooner or later, he's gonna get it. And I mean sooner than later, he gets it. As far as
not just Connecticut go, but as far as the industry goes, even as the Skinny Boys, we always show mad love to Steezo and New Haven because, first of all, we were born in New Haven, raised in Bridgeport. So, you know, big up to the whole entire Connecticut, not just the Elm City, not just Bridgeport, the whole entire Connecticut, because we put on for the whole state. But at the end of the day, we represented hip hop universally. When you talk about just innovators, man, I mean, one thing I can say, not just being infectious, I mean, Steve was, there's no words to describe him, man, because at the end of the day, this dude is like off the meter. Everything has to be top notch. I remember the last performance we had that included them, him, Jim Slice, Chris. When I tell you, before that show, Steve came up to the studio in Wallingford, this guy named Pat Runs. And he knew we were up there and he says, man, I just come up here, man, to see if I can give y'all some input on the show. I know you're already ill. I said, listen, man, it's not about how ill we are, man. This is how we do in hip hop, man. You know, if you got something to add to us, man, by all means, we're for it. So we're in there, we're getting the show, you know, ready. And Steve said, Jay, what do you think about this? Sean, what do you think about this? Jock, what you thinking? We're like all ears because we know how creative he can be. You know, I mean, we always said four minds is better than three. And if you add the rest of these fellas on here that are out here, Chris, Jim Slice, Dulio, the rest of the fellas, when I tell you, you put all them minds together, man, I mean, I'm not one to shy away from talent at all. When you have things like, let's just say if you put us all in the studio, I'm all ears. I know how to humble myself. So when Steve came with something, it was like, I don't have to weigh it on a scale. I know whatever he's coming with is ill. So those are like the memories that I have. I mean, not only just putting him up on Instagram today and just seeing all the love that my brother, you know, had throughout, not just the tri-state, but I'm talking about from coast to coast. I'm talking about people chiming in from the UK. Steve was just, he was an infectious person, man, and you couldn't have nothing but love for him because I don't know a time that I know of that I've seen Steve without the smile.
That's right.
He always had something to laugh at.
Great, you know? Human.
He always had something to feel good about. So, I mean, coming from us, the Skinny Boys, man, we have nothing but love for not just Steezo, man, but all these fellas right here, man. And they know it because they've always, you know, been around us, man. We don't, like I said, we don't represent the tri-state. We represent hip-hop in general.
There you go.
Word up. Yo, Sean there? Sean? Where's Sean?
Nah, Sean's not here, man. I wish I could have gotten him on.
So let's go to Jim Slice, man. What's happening, my brother? Jim Slice, what's man. Up? Got the tough background. I've been talking about it, man. He look all professional over here. You know what I mean? So tell us about, you know, just your history, man, with the man and you know, how he affected your life too, Mark. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. I'm gonna kinda do it like real quick. I'm gonna do it like Dooley. So I first seen Steezo, we didn't meet yet, at the Albie Boot Boys Club in the Hill, at that Spring Street. And it was a camp over there. So I walked across the street. I think the camp was over, so all the kids was out we was all out in the front, I guess waiting for our rides to pick us up. So I walked across the street, and this one kid was on a fence,
flipping off the fence. So he kept doing it, and the kids was watching, and I'm standing to the side and I'm watching. So this other kid goes, "You ain't better than Steve. You ain't better than Steve." So he goes, "I wish I could find Steve." Then he looks across the street, and there goes Steve. So you see this light-skinned kid with an afro. We all had afros back then. So they go, "Steve, come here, come here." So Steve come over, and he was like, "Show him how you flip off a fence." So now the two kids, Steve and the other kid, they're climbing up on this like silver metal fence and doing flips off the fence. So that's when I first seen Steve, but we didn't meet. So as we got older, I'm going to say around maybe 13, 14 in that time frame, I met Steve while I shook his hand at the Elks Club. We went to the Elks Club one night, DJ Joey D and Superior Zam was rocking, and Steezo was by the door. So when we walked in, the crew that I was with, they were speaking to him because they already knew him. And, you know, that's the first time we seen each other and we spoke, at least the first time he seen me. So, and we said, "What's up?" You know what I'm saying? So then time goes on again. And now this is the breakdancing era. And when his breakdancing crew, I think it was D-Force at the time, they broke up.
Right.
I was currently over into Hamden. So Steezo came into Hamden looking to recruit some people for his crew, his new crew. So that's when he came and met myself, Bob, Kenny Gauze, a few of us at the New Hallville Hamden Rec. So, you know, that's when we like started interacting with each other. Like, "What up, Steve? What up, Jim?" You know what I mean? But so that's how our relationship came about. And from there, growing up, you know, just being around in New Haven and seeing each other, we built a relationship. So, but to talk about his personality and piggyback off what these guys were saying, Steezo was, like Super J hit it, Steezo was a person to get an idea. And if he had an idea and he really liked the idea, he would work at that idea. He would go get the materials he needed. Even if he couldn't afford the good materials, he would get something that was close to what you're supposed to use and try to create his own thing. Like, Steezo was the type of person, he might, if Steezo found a cheap pair of sneakers, right, with two stripes on the side, he might draw the third stripe and say, "These are some Adidas." Like, he'll do something crazy like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So, and there's times, like, one thing people don't realize, in 1991, I want to say, Steezo, and he kept telling it to me, he kept going, "Jim, wouldn't it be a good idea if we had these vests with these matching visors?" And it kept being a repetitive thought in his head. And one day, finally, I went to his house, and he was like, "Jim, I'm glad you're here. I want to show you. Check this out. And lo and behold, he had created a vest with a matching sunglasses. And that's just how he was. When if he felt he had a good idea, he would find his way to bring that idea to fruition. He never let anyone, no matter what they had to say or how anybody else felt, stop him. He had his thought and his dream, because he knew once he accomplished it, everybody else would fall in line. So he actually created the visors and the vest, and he, you know, some of them didn't come out right, but he found ways to perfect it, make it better. And next thing you know, we were going 125th Street to Bell's Fashions in Rockman and selling visors and vests on 125th Street, to the point where to see that idea that Steezo had in 91, 92, to see that idea flourish into something more, to where it's being sold on 125th Street, and there are certain rappers who I see myself, the Chief Rocker, Busy B, buy one and put it on right then and there and continue walking down 125th Street. I've seen a couple of music videos back then on the music TV video stations where I've seen rappers and people, if they weren't the exact rapper, maybe they were extras in the video, but they were wearing the vest with the matching visors. And that experience was like seeing Steezo take an idea and create it to a level to the point where I've even learned how the Africans and the Haitians, how they would bootleg your product so fast, to the point where it was widespread. No matter what sting that you went down 125th Street, you started seeing more and more of the vests and the visors. And just giving him that credit, like, you created all of this. Like, they're bootlegging your idea right now, and you've created all of what they're doing. And this is all of you, even though you're not getting the money for what they're stealing from you and your idea. But it's, this is all of you. To see 125th Street dressed up and matching vest and visors, like, I don't think anybody in New Haven probably, if you didn't go to New York like that in that time and hang out like we did, just to know, like, these New Yorkers thinking they on to something. This is some New Haven, Connecticut people idea that they rocking right now. And it was just a beautiful, beautiful sight to see in my eyes. Like, they don't understand, like, as people, two people coming from a small town, New Haven, we just turned Harlem out. We turned it out. 125th Street turned out on those vests and visors.
Well, you know what? Today I learned that Steezo was wearing what Hammer called Hammer pants before Hammer.
Yes.
That's what I learned before. Way before.
I remember the first time I saw them. I was going to that show before the video. When Steve used to live across from Denny's. That was Philly.
Yeah.
Philly. He had them on there. Remember I said, yo, what you got on? But it was those pants. And then later on, Hammer started wearing, and the whole world started wearing that. But that, you know, but that's who Steve was, you know?
Yeah. He would make his stuff. He don't mean to cut you off. But if he can't go buy it, he would make it in a heartbeat and wear it. And you go to the store looking for it. But you don't understand, he made that.
Yo, multi-talented.
If you leave a Louis Vuitton pocketbook, Steve find Louis Vuitton pocketbook, make a vest and a matching Louis Vuitton sneaker. He'll go over, he'll take off the stripe on the Nike and put his own stripe up there. He'll put that Louis Vuitton S, cut it out. After that, he'll do the interior of your car, cut your hair, do a beat all in one day.
When I asked him about the vest, I was like, well, how'd you make the vest? He was like, look, check it out. I went to the store and I bought this one vest right here. I don't even think he went to like a thrift shop or something. He said, I just needed the vest. And then what I did is I started ripping it apart and I put the pieces on the cardboard and started tracing them out and then just traced out the pattern. And then he took the cardboard, he cut it out, took the cardboard, put it on the material that he got, and then cut out the material and then started sewing it together. And then just started using sewing machines and that's how he was, man. That's how he was. I remember that.
Now, excuse me, fellas. I have to log off. I have a serious emergency at my house right now.
Oh, wow.
But I appreciate the invite, man, but I'll get absolutely back to y'all.
All right,
okay,
brother. Hey, brother. All
right, thank y'all so much, man.
We with you.
Yes.
All right, brother.
All love, y'all.
All right, for sure. So let's continue. One of the things that I heard today was how when Steezo did his video in New York and he invited a whole bunch of people from up here to go down there, right? And at the time, of course, you know, we had the beast in the city, right?
Uh-huh.
And everybody went down there, and because of that video, there was no beef that day. None. Can anybody talk about that day?
I'll elaborate on it, because I can say before the video, we did fight. We did fight the label to do the video in New Haven. And the label just would not bite. They was like, these people are giving us a good deal right now. We don't want to push the money factor on them and having them go to another state. But these are the same people, company that did, like, say, Biz Markie, You Got What I Need video.
Right.
And so we couldn't, because of the money, I guess the label's financial aspect of it, and they didn't want to push them to try to go to Connecticut. They was like, just do it here in New York. It's we got to get the first video off. So, all right. So, yeah, so we couldn't get it in the video in New Haven, Connecticut at that time. We had to do the video in New York. And we just went around and told everybody back then, because you're talking about, what, the late 80s. So everywhere we went, we was like, yo, we're doing the video on this day at this location in New York. Be there, blah, blah, blah. And so we the night before, stayed at the Empire, Midtown Manhattan. So that's where we stayed that night. And anytime we did things, we always stayed at the Empire. And so when we were at the Empire, we got up that morning, went down to the video, and it was like, oh, man, ain't nobody show up, man. It's just us, but we're going to do what we got to do, but nobody showed up to the video. And it was crazy. Next thing you know, we were standing outside because the video was on top of a roof, but we were all outside in front of the building. It was down by the major courthouse in Manhattan, in that area, that main courthouse that everybody go to. So it was down that way. So we were standing outside like, man, ain't nobody show up, man. You know, that's okay. It's cool. We're going to do what we got to do. Next thing you know, you hear all of this noise, right? And you look down the street and you see a mob of guys coming. And like you said, Juan, you had personal territorial beefs in New Haven, like the Bill versus the Trey, whatever, you know, that was the names at the time. And to see both people from both of those territories together coming down the street, downtown Manhattan, making noise. We here, taking, you know, like some Manhattan stores, the fruit is on the outside, on the stands, walking by, and just taking an apple and come, as they were coming towards the video. And then when you got there, you know, the rest is all in the video, what you've seen on the rooftop, but it did bring two high-power parts of towns in New Haven that really were going to war with each other. And for that day, they literally traveled from New Haven to downtown Manhattan and went up on that rooftop and partied together.
Well, you should have seen the luxury cars outside, the luxury Jeeps.
Is that right?
At the time, everybody had a Jeep.
Hey, Juan, you know what made that happen? You know what made that happen?
And that's Mr. By the way, that's just Mr. E, you know, talking with us. He has he produced.
That happened for all them to be there. God rest his soul, was Vincent Daniels. And V was from New York.
Right.
But he was at KSI. Right.
Y'all got lost. Can y'all hear me? One, two.
We got you, Chris. We got you. We here.
Okay.
V, and Chris lets you know, V put that together. All that jewelry that Steve had on, that was coming from V.
Yeah, I heard that V gave him that joint that he was with.
Oh yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Yo, shout out to Vinny, man. Rest in peace, man. That was my dude.
Absolutely.
Well, I tell you, yeah.
Absolutely.
That was my dude, man.
No.
Yeah. And he was on the DJ tip.
That's true.
Right. Shout out to V, man.
I forgot about that.
Hey, Chris, we talk about the video shoot, man. That's what we're talking about right now.
You know? Oh, word.
Yeah.
The rooftop.
Yeah, the rooftop.
Oh, man. you know, we end up finding out that Nas was there.
Is that Nas right?
He
froze up.
He was little then, but, you know, he hadn't even done Back to the Grill yet.
Yeah.
But Steve found out that he was at the video shoot.
Okay.
Yeah, so was Just Ice.
Yup, Just Ice.
And so was K Bourne from the Classical 2, Rap's New Generation. Wow. He was there too.
Yeah, that was my joint.
And on the low, Bones. Remember Bones? The dude that started doing the documentaries?
Yeah, Bones Malone.
The actor.
Bones Malone.
Yeah.
Man, Bones, that's when he first started his career. Mm-hmm. We sat and talked for like 20 minutes. And next thing I know, he was blowing up.
So let's go to E, man. Mr. E in the building, man, you know. And I mean, tell us about how Steezo worked with you in the studio, man. Tell us about his studio work and his ethic.
Well, it was crazy because we was no angels, me and my brother Ray. Chris knows. See, he's saying you too low. I'm not saying I was an angel. But we was out there. It wasn't.
Good. Steve, yeah, I ain't gonna mess with you.
Yo, Steve's family, like, you know, because his aunt used to always watch me when I was a kid growing up. And Steve always looked at me and him as being cousin. I mean, me and Dooley is definitely cousin. But Steve looked at me as being his cousin. And he was like, yo, E, listen, man, I need a favor, man. I said, what up, man? He said, yo, man, I'm trying to put this joint out. I said, word. He said, yo, you gotta talk to your brother Ray, man. Because Ray was out there, you know, wilding, doing what he was doing. And I was...
Shout out to Ray Bug.
Yeah, and I could go to Ray Juan and be like, yo, Ray, listen, man, I think we're gonna need a certain amount of money. He said, how much? I said, that's it? He was like, Juan, he was like, that's it? I said, yeah. He said, oh, that's not the word about it. I got you. So we started...
Ray Bug,
Yeah, we hooked up at my grandmother's house going to my spot because I had the ASR, the MP, what I had, Chris? Remember you came to my house and where the funk was at?
Yeah, that was the ASR. Said,
where the funk was at, right? Hey, Juan, we in the studio doing Where's the Funk, right? So Lowe putting it together. So I'm walking around going, whistling. And Steve goes, yo, that's it. We're putting that whistle in. We're putting the whistle in.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Lowe, I'm lying.
Who whistled?
I was not whistling, fucking out.
That was, no, but I'm saying, who's in actual recording?
No, he was listening to me, and Steve said, hold up, because Lowe put the beat together, where the fuck? Right. And I was whistling, like, bugging like I always do, because, you know, I was producing. Right. You know, sometimes I like making noise. And Steve was like, yo, that's we using right there, that whistle. Lowe, I'm lying, Lowe?
Nope. After I heard the whistle, I put the bass line on there after I heard the whistle.
But who whistled it into the microphone? Steezo?
I don't know. I think that was Steve. I don't know. Now,
I mean it was either E or it was Steezo.
I don't know who did it at the time.
Well, y'all was in the studio.
What was y'all smoking?
we was smoking a lot.
I mean, no, Dan was smoking a lot. I wasn't smoking. I was smoking.
I know I was. I ain't gonna lie, goddamn.
It is what it is. But at the end of the day, Juan, listen, when they put the record together, we said, yo, we going to Charlie Marauders. And I said, yo, Ray, listen, we got to go to Charlie's. He said, Charlie. I said, yeah. I said, yo, we're going to have fun, Ray. Yo, listen, we're going to put the record out. We're going to do what we do. Because they will always come to me. Lowe and Steve will always come to me. Yo, check this out, eh? This is what we need. This is what we got to do. Talk to Ray. Ray was like, yo, I'm on board. Whatever y'all need, I got you. Let's just do this. So we was going to Charlie's. We went to Charlie's in the fucking, matter of fact, it wasn't snowing yet, right, Lowe?
I don't think so, but I know it was cold.
When we got out of Long Island, Juan, when we got out of Long Island, it must have been like 10 feet of snow. But we made it back home. Long story short, Steve put out the record. He called me up and said, E, listen to Hot 97. They're playing the joint.
I remember that.
No, E, what was that record label? What was it, E&J Records? Just for you.
It was
E&R
Records.
E&R? No, it wasn't E&R yet. It was Funktown Records. Remember, Lowe?
Yep, that was the first name.
It was Funktown Records, Juan, and then some dude, Danny, that put Jamaica Danny. Was beefing with him. He said, yo, you can't put that record out. Jamaica dude. And we said, yo, fuck it. We just changed the whole thing. We're going to put out E&R Records. Right, Lowe?
All right, I do remember that happening.
Hold on a second. Historical wise, so you mean to tell me that you put out Where the Funk At on Funktown Records and then turn around and put it on E&J Records?
E&R.
Yeah, because they pressed up one round and then they didn't want to press up no more. Danny, I don't think Danny didn't want to press up no more. But then.
Right. I remember that because it was in Howard Avenue. It was on Howard Avenue. And Steve was complaining like Danny didn't want to press the record up no more. Okay, because that's interesting. Right. I didn't realize that record came out on two different labels.
Right.
I got two stories. The first one, Steezo comes to the station, and I'm in the office, and I'm listening to Miles Davis because I'm trying to cool out, right? So he walks into the office and says to me, "Yo, you don't know nothing about Miles Davis." So I'm like, what? So he went on to give me a 45-minute Harvard-Yale lecture on Miles Davis and what Miles Davis meant to jazz and the American art form of jazz for 45 minutes. We could have taken that to Harvard or to Yale. That's how he rocked it. That's when I realized that this dude was not just about hip hop, right? Even though everything being for real, we know that hip hop is about everything anyway, right? So we put all of it together. But that's story number one. Story number two, he calls me up and he says, yo, I'm thinking about doing this character that's gonna be a clown. Right? So I'm like, what? It's like, yeah, man, I'm gonna do this character. It's gonna be a clown. And I'm going out here, right? And I said, all right, man. So I'm thinking he messing with me, man. He must be smoking or something. I don't know. So I think he messing with me. Next thing I know, it's blowing up. The character is blowing up, right? Those are my two stories. I mean, and just the brother was a human, man. I mean, he was not only a great artist, but he was a human. And, you know, and every time I was around him, man, I felt good. I mean, you know, there are some people, man, that you go around them, man, and, you know, they taking you down and all of that. I always felt good around the brother, man. And, you know, the last time I talked to him, man, he came up to E's house. And E said, yo, man, I got somebody over here right here that wants to say something. You know, somebody want to talk to you. And he puts these on the phone. And I was like, what? You know what I'm saying? And we kicked it, man. You know, and that was 2 years ago, right, E? 2 years ago.
Yeah. 2018.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so I'm still in shock. You know, I'm still in shock. You know, but his legacy will go on because of the fact that he left us so much, right? I mean, we just finished talking about fashion, music, dancing. I don't know what the clown thing was. But
that's a character.
But he threw that in.
The clown thing was, I need some extra cash.
There you go. And Dulio, I didn't even know that he was into graffiti. That's something I didn't know.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
But yeah, man, fellas.
Hey, Ron, see this right here? Let me see. You can see the fire?
Yeah.
Remember that low? Was that my grandmother's house?
Let me see. Oh, yeah. Damn. That was the cover.
Remember the cover? And Steve was like, he said, yo, we're going to take a picture. And we was like, he just picked up an album. He said, yo, you got some alcohol in here? I was like, yeah, put in there. Got some alcohol for my grandmother. The dude put the alcohol on the record wine and said, vroom. He said, yo, take a picture of this. And Steve and Lo was right there. I'm like, yo, these dudes wildin'.
So I got another question. So, you know, we really ain't talked about the music as much as you know, as we were talking about the man, right? You know, because the music was extremely part of who he was, right? Can you guys tell me if you got any stories about, you know, first of all, what was your favorite record out of all the work that he put out? What was your favorite record? Anybody?
My favorite record was Figure It Out.
That's a good one.
I think Chris did his thing on that.
Chris, how about you, Chris?
Steve's hardest cut?
Yeah.
Okay, solo?
Yeah. Steve shocked me on that one. He knew he had to step his game up with solo. So that's when, you know what I mean? He knew he had to step his game up. But it's that one and Gets Into His Moves, classic too, man. That was my favorite joint on the album, on the low.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with when it comes to the Crazy Noise album material. Like Chris said, Gets Into His Moves was, I think that was, to me, I okayed that one like gave him a nod on that musically because we needed We needed something hard for the hood and the streets, even though he wasn't rapping like that in that sense, but musically it had to hit like that. So Gets Into His Moves and bring the Horn, and then Offset, you know, of the album. Of course, I'm gonna say Bop Your Heads.
Yeah, I'm about to say Offset. That. Bop Your Heads.
Yo, that album unleashed a whole bunch of classic samples, man, that really made people dig. And I mean, y'all talk. I'm just talking about on the digging aspect of the breaks that we was using.
Yeah.
Yo, because, I mean, nobody was really tapping some of the stuff that was on there, man, as far as that Joe Quarterman, Free Soul. The Rock Dirge. A lot of that stuff, man, we were the first ones to sample. I mean, Skull Snaps, that was just the most famous.
Mm. Right.
But I'm talking about, that was the first time hip-hop heard that Sly Stone, A Simple Song.
Yeah.
Rugged. You know what I'm saying? And it was a bunch of classics. That's why it's so, yeah, he so classic baby. Now.
Yeah. Even with Talking Sense. Talking Sense was the, what was that, Average White Band?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, we's bringing back, bringing people back. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. The original groups to make, go touring again.
So hey, drum roll, Dulio.
You.
Come on.
All right, I'm going to go with Steve Hardest Joints. I'm going to go with To the Max. I'll run To the Max all day.
There's a story behind To the Max. There's a story behind To the Max. Come on, you want to do the honors?
I didn't want to give them To the Max. We was in the studio. Chris will tell you. I'm like, you can't give them that, Chris.
Dude, you telling the story backwards.
How was it?
Dude, you didn't want to give it up.
Dooley didn't want it. And I was like, are you crazy? Dude's like, nah, that's whack. No, what you used to say, he used to say it's Genie. Nah, that's Genie. Yeah.
Oh, at first I said it was Genie until I got into the studio. There you go. You right.
Until it got looped and it got sampled.
It got sampled. Right. I was like, oh, nah.
Right. And I'm going to tell you what switched it, because Paul, we took it up to Paul C. And Paul put the kicks and snares on it, made it sound like a record. And then Julie was like, whoa.
I like the joint when Steve came to me. It's like, yo, E, I need you to do me a jazz joint, man. So I looked at Bob's, one of Bob James' joints, Mr. S.
Yeah.
When he did that, I was like, Steve can write. Because listen,
he stayed in your basement.
People go write to certain beats, unorthodox beats, and I never heard him like switch his flow and different stuff. When he did Mr. S, I was like, this dude's a writer.
Yeah, there you go.
He's a versatile writer.
Yeah, Steve had. Damn,
my phone gonna go off.
It's like this, Vaughn. It's like this. We will have 100 records in there, queuing beats and stuff. Steve will come with 2 records and make a hit record.
Wow.
You understand what I'm saying? I never understood that. He'd be like, yo, take this drum and put it with this and let me do the rest. Actually, you know, this dude got a video on MTV. You like, yo, what the hell happened? Me and Chris have 1,000 records.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
Dooley, this is the trivial cup for you, Dooley.
That's crazy.
What was the first joint y'all did together?
Together was Crazy Noise. No, off the Funky Worm. No, Crazy Noise in a remix off the Funky Worm.
No. the first one, Dewey, off of Bouncy Lady.
Oh, man. Okay, so you going back in the one track days, not even a 4 track.
Right.
Face Trace.
Yep, Face Trace.
Oh, that's
great. You just got it. You named that too.
Yep, Face Trace. Face Trace. I gotta bring that back.
Hey, Ron, but one thing I gotta say about all this music stuff, besides all this,
yes, sir.
Steve was a real father. He loved his kids.
That's no doubt.
He loved his kids. Because I remember I used to drop my kids off to Steve house, and he'd be like, yo, hey, E-Boogie, I got him, man. Just leave him, man. I got him, man. He used to, look, he right here, he loved the boys, man. And he was definitely a father, man. He loved his kids. I don't care about the music, whatever. Yeah. He was a family man.
There you go.
No, I get that to him too.
Just to piggyback on what you just said, is that yes, he did love his kids, but I think to even go further, he did just love kids, period, man. Because hence him being Weezy the Clown, he did it for who? He did it for the kids. Like, there's no money involved, but that's a lot of work to let kids beat up on you for like 4 hours at a party. That's right. What I'm saying? And he did that mainly for kids. So
that's right.
Yes, he loved his kids and his immediate family, but Steve will love kids in general too.
And I gotta tell you, I seen him perform as Weezy, and it was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, totally amazing. I mean, it was ridiculous. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, go ahead, E.
I remember one incident, right? They had a parade in New York City. You know why? How they had the Spanish parade in New York all the time, every year or whatever.
Yeah, Puerto Rico.
And Steve got that buggy. You know the classic joint, the yellow buggy, whatever.
Right.
And what kind of car was that, Chris? The one he had, the toy car, you know.
The Doom Buggy.
Okay, he goes, yo, E, listen.
Can y'all hear me? Can you see me?
Yeah.
I can see. He said, let's take a ride, man. He said, yo, let's go to the parade, man. Roll with me. He said, it was me and him. And I said, man, I should bring my jacket. But it was warm in the daytime. I was like, you know what? Screw it. I rolled down there when I'm on the highway in the buggy. We putting it up. You know, probably was doing like 60. Cars flying. Anyway, we got to the parade. Missy Elliott, everybody. This before Missy was big. Missy Elliott was big. Right. We seen me and Steve was together. More of the story on our way coming back. Freezing out. I was like, oh, Steve, you're killing me. It was so cold in that buggy, man. No heat, no nothing. My boy, yo. But every time he went somewhere, he always say, yo, E, what's up? We went to Martha Vineyard. Me and Steve went to go stay at my Uncle Chef's house. We had these buggies, whatever, the stand-up thing with the motor, whatever. We flying around the vineyard and all that. Me and Steve, me and Steve did so much stuff together. It's killing me. Now it's going to really starting to take a toll on me because we did a lot together.
So, fellas, in closing, can everybody, what last thoughts? Let's start with you, Dulio. Last thoughts.
All right. My last thoughts right now is, and I'm just going to keep saying it, very intelligent human being, super talented, a genius, a performer, a father, a great friend, a brother, and he's definitely stuck in my heart. I'm happy to be part of his legacy amongst the gentlemen that I'm here with now, my brothers, and to say, I miss him dearly. My heart shattered, but I know one thing that was beautiful is that he will be remembered. And that's the reason why we got into music, is to be remembered. Because one day, as we was out there digging in the crates for old records, finding old OJs, stuff like that, there's gonna be another generation way before when we pass, they're gonna go back looking for music and they're gonna pick this up like, yo, you know about this dude Steezo? Man, this album is crazy. Then they're going to read the credits. They're going to see Jim name, Jim face. They're going to see Chris's face. They're going to see my name and be like, yo, let's find out where these dudes at. And they're going to pick our records up. And that legacy is going to go on and on till the end of time. And I miss him. I love him. It's my brother.
Jim.
Okay, so Dooley pretty much said a lot, man. He was, nothing's all good, right? Nothing's all bad. And we had a brother relationship. I mean, like family. We argue and don't speak. And then 2 months later, what up, man? What up? Like nothing ever happened. You know what I mean? So he was definitely my brother. We went to London. We both, our first time traveling out of this country, going to another world, was just me and him. All we had was each other. Everybody else is stranger. Everybody else is a groupie or a fan or a supporter, whatever. All we had was each other coming from where we came from. So, again, we had our good times. We had our bad times. And I know that relationship was like that with all of us. You know what I mean? We stopped talking to each other and talked to each other again later on. But we knew how to, at a certain point in time, come together and create. And a lot of what we were able to do was based on our circle and what we did to create, to make things happen. And you see a lot of people, Steve, you for different reasons at times, but for whatever the reason is, when you were around Steve, that was always a positive thing to be around him. So if you were making clothes at that time in the circle of that, then that was positive to have him on your side. If you were giving the kids party, that was positive to have him on your side. If you needed a haircut, it was positive to have him on your side. If you needed a couple of dollars or a ride, it was positive to have him on your side. So we can all, in our relationships, have our ups and downs, but to have Steezo in your life was always more of a positive person to have in your life, you know what I mean, and around you, because he will try to help you. and do for you.
E.
That's what we all did for each other.
E, last thoughts, man.
Dooley said it all. I mean, everything that Dooley said, Dooley 100% right. I mean, me and Steve used to get together, you know what I'm saying? We talk about certain things or whatever. You know, he used to come to Connecticut, like, don't let nobody know I'm coming here. That's how he was. I'm going to call you up, E-Boogie, I'm going to come see you, man. I'm going to go see a couple of few cats, Dooley, whoever. And that was it. But he loved the ground that I walked on. I mean, he know I had his back 100%, whatever he need, when I was here for him, thick and thin. And that's how we roll. Whatever Dooley said and Jim said, that's how he was. And Steve was like funny acting towards a lot of people. For me, it was always 100% genuine. And Steve didn't like a lot of people, and people didn't like him, jealous of him because the way he used to flow. You know, pretty boy, you know what I'm saying? That's what happens when you're a pretty boy, you know what I'm saying? You know, well, it's the truth. And he's dressing, you know, like far as fashion and all that, like Chris said earlier and all that. Any fashionable person, the way you roll, you want, you're unorthodox, you're going to be hated. And that was Steve.
I like to say something. I grew up with Steve since a little kid, since about 7, 8 years old. Still talk to his son to this day. We still tight. Anytime we come up, we get together. You know what I mean? I just remember always taking us places, always going to his house, man. He was always a good father, man. I know him more as a father than as a musician, than anything. I remember coming to the studio, but I know him from being my boy's dad. My father brought me to him. He's like, yo, this dude gonna cut your hair now. He's like, yo, you gotta come hang with my sons, man. And that was it. You know what I mean? And
awesome.
From a little kid, I'm 33 years old now. I know him my whole life like that. You know what I mean? And he will always create stuff and he always makes sure we straight and we just stay tight like that. So
there you go. And the influence on young people, man. I mean, not just with you, Lil E, but also, you know, with the kids in this community. I mean, you know, we already talked about that, you know, and we lost Chris, you know, he's somewhere on the road somewhere, you know, but I want to thank all of you for, you know, for chiming in, man, on this cat's life. It's been amazing today, like what the world has, how the world has responded to his death, right? Which shows us that he just wasn't about New Haven. He was about this universal kind of cat that, you know, like a lot of people embrace, you know? And sometimes, man, it's sad, but you know, like sometimes, you know, you don't get those roses, man, while you alive, you know what I mean? But is that Chris? I hope so. No, that's Superman. Oh, man, okay. But yeah, man, you know, and I know that he has really, you know, made an impact on my life and made an impact on this community. And we got Superman, Superman J, man. So listen, bro, we was just closing out, man, and we wanted to kind of do in our last thoughts, man. Can you make a statement for us, man? Last thoughts. Is he still there? He's trying to get his audio on.
Well, so Juan.
Yeah.
Real quick, while I'm here, I just want to do this real quick.
Oh, go ahead, bro.
Hey, yo, this is Jim Slice, one third of Steezo. You're listening to The Rhythm of the City with Juan Castillo, 94.3 YBC.
That's hot. Superman, Superman J, we got you on now?
Yes, you got me back, man.
All right, bro. So listen, man, we just closing out, man. Everything all right?
Okay.
We just wanted to make sure you was good. And
yeah, I appreciate that, man.
Good, man. We were making our last thoughts, man, and we're gonna end the show with you, man. Like, you know, what's the last thing that you want to leave this community and the world, man, about your man?
You know, when you think of Steezo's passing, just like when you think of Fred the Godson and so many others, man, I mean, my whole thing is basically, man, we got to start treating each other with respect, with love, while we're here, while they're here, as opposed to when they're gone, because, you know, we don't get no second do-over chances, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
that's the way I've always looked at it, man. Give people their flowers, give them their just due while they're here. It's like, you know, when someone wants to give someone an accolade, don't wait until they're gone. Give it to them while they're here so that they can appreciate it. Because at the end of the day, Steezo knows that he was loved beyond everybody that's on this call right now. He was loved beyond. Yeah. You know, I don't care what people go through. People can go through their ups and downs and bickering between one another here and there. But guess what? Family always comes back. Family always comes back. And that's what I look at Steve at, as I look at him, Sean, Dulio, you know, Chris, all these guys. I look at them as family, man, because that's what it is. It's not just a music family. You know, me and Slice, we chop it up every so often. Dulio, you know, I'm going to definitely get Chris's number, man, because at the end of the day, you know, we gotta learn to love one another. We in some trying times, man. So let's learn to do that, man. Give people their flowers while they're here, while they can appreciate them and start appreciating one another.
No question. On that note, man, fellas, I want to thank you for being a part of this show. You know, we're gonna miss our brother.
Yes.
But, so his legacy lives on. His legacy lives on. And
we're going to make sure of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So this is Juan Castillo on the Rhythm of the City, 94.3 WYBC.
You're in the danger zone. You're in the danger zone. I feel it. It's a good sensation, like a two-year-old child doing her shulation. I'm talented in everything I invent, keeping cash flow growing and paying the rent. I invent with the power of a sorcerer. They call me Steezoe and I'm the torturer. And I claim everything from the brain and all the negative stuff is being drained. Stop it. Yes, it's science, I'm dropping it. There ain't an MC out there who can mop it. I'm blessed with the gift and the music is hype. Knock the human out once and say goodnight. But if I happen to hear a moan or groan, he just entered the danger zone. Were you in the danger zone? A vigilante rapper, killing and collecting. After this song is finished, you be respecting. Steezoe the man and fine like a cannon. Instead of Buck Wallin, I'm Dan Tannen. Teachers, well, I'm the substitute. You're being terminated, so give a salute. Like a yield sign, slow down and keep caution. Like Diana, I'm the one forcing. I can reach from levels 1 to the 10th. You don't believe me? That's on the strength. I do a show, have to get respect. And go and pick up my royalty check. But when I get it, no, there ain't no loan. You're in the danger zone. Are you in the danger zone? Start trouble like Dennis Dominus. I'm the master at achieving war, y'all. 3-9, 85, 42nd call. They call me Steezo. I drive a Benz diesel, so step off and relax and be calm. My name's Steezo, I'm like a atomic bomb. So when I rhyme, no, it's not off beat. I'm like trick or treat, you come and get some treat. Just like candy, cause the style is dope and just dandy. But yo, I'm bad to the bone, so you're in the danger zone. Are you in the danger zone? You're in the danger zone, bro. On the strength. Engineer, show my man can fly. Sean T, no little as IST. Me, myself, the SO. Bust a body vessel. Doc Terra. Never made an error. Randy Love. Man, TT on the strip. Got it.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.